I'm going to be reading in a moment from Luke, the 15th chapter, so if you want to be turning there, we will actually spend most of our time in Luke 16, but we want to begin with the 15th chapter. It's good to be here this morning. I do appreciate the presence of all. It's the bulletin we list a number of folks who are out of town, and then there are some who are sick, but we've got a good number here and appreciate your presence. Glad to have those who are visiting with us. And I invite you to turn to the 15th chapter of Luke because it contains one of the best known, one of the favorite parables of Jesus, the parable of the prodigal son. We looked at this parable a few weeks ago, and I want you to remember that this parable was spoken in response to criticism. In verse 1, it says, "Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to him to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes complained, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" Jesus began, then he told about the man with the sheep. He told about the woman with the coin. And then, of course, he tells the story of the man whose son goes away and then comes back. These parables, the first two, they are intended to show to the Pharisees, this is the heart of God. This is my heart, Jesus says. I care about the lost. You know, people care about a lost sheep. They worry about a lost coin. I worry about lost people. That's why I'm with tax collectors and sinners. The story of the prodigal son, the rebellious son, it's the story of how God is willing to forgive when we come back. You know, it shows that God understands that sometimes people make bad choices, but when they come back with open arms, he receives them. He throws a party for them. But it's also clear, and we talked some about this, the end of that 16th chapter, when he talks about the older brother, it's really a challenge. Just speaking of what the heart of God was like should have challenged the scribes and Pharisees to look at their heart. But Jesus doesn't stop there. By painting the picture of the older brother, he in essence says, this is your heart. And you may remember, the parable doesn't end. The father pleads with the older brother, and then we're not told what the older brother says. Because it was up to them to write the ending. They could change and have a heart more like God. I'm saying that because you will notice in verse 3, it said he spoke this parable to them. Well, I think the them is very clearly, though everybody is to hear it, it was to the scribes and Pharisees. But chapter 16, without any pause, then he also said to his disciples. This time he turns to the disciples. Yet, what we will see at verse 14 is the Pharisees are still there. And they are hearing all of this. So, chapter 15, to the scribes and Pharisees with the disciples being present. Chapter 16, to the disciples with the scribes and Pharisees being present. This 16th chapter is one of the more challenging chapters in the book of Luke because the parable of the unjust steward that we're going to look at in just a moment, you have a man who was a lousy manager who wasted his owner's goods or his master's goods. Then he cheats his master out of money that was owed to him and ends up getting praised. And that confuses a lot of folks. Then you have the story of the rich man and Lazarus. And people dispute about, is it a parable? Is it a true story? And I want to offer to you that this 16th chapter is really dominated or should be seen as dominated by one thought. You cannot serve God and mammon. this 16th chapter, it has a number of very good, shall we say, secondary points. And my intention next week, if, you know, in the will of God and, you know, nothing changes, that I want to examine some of the secondary points from this chapter, particularly with the rich man and Lazarus. That little, we might almost say, the interruption in verses 14 through 18. But the main point of this chapter is to call upon us to look at our attitude toward money. Verse 14 gives us one reason maybe why that is. The Pharisees were lovers of money. But it's not just that. Who did it say in the 15th chapter was coming to Jesus? Well, among those coming to Jesus were the tax collectors. The tax collectors had quite a reputation for covetousness, for greed. Jesus welcomes them, and yet at the same time, as Jesus does with all of us, he challenges us to examine our heart. Whatever your background, Jesus is going to require you, if you're going to be a true disciple, to forsake all and become one of his. So, begin with me the reading of the parable of the unjust steward. He also said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward." Some of your translations will say a manager, a guy who's in charge of things. "And an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods." You know, Jesus doesn't tell where the accusation came from, but what becomes clear is the master believes it. "So he called him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.' Then the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I am ashamed to beg.'" Can we just pause it? The idea would seem to be that, you know, here is this man. His job's being taken away from him, but evidently the owner gives him a little time to get all the books together. You know, you got to get the records together before I completely take it away from you. And this man, we today would say he had a white-collar job, and he says, I can't do this blue-collar work. You know, I can't get out here and dig. You know, too old, too weak, you know. He doesn't say. Then he says, "I got too much pride to be a beggar. What am I going to do? I have resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses." So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, "How much do you owe my master?" And he said, 100 measures of oil." And I might say, this is estimated to be between 800 and 875 gallons of oil. And the oil here would be olive oil. You know how many olives you'd have to harvest and beat, press to get over 800 gallons? Well, that's what this man's responsible for giving to the master. And he said to him, "Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Let's just cut it in half." He just saved this man over 400 gallons of oil, of obligation. So then he said to another, "And how much do you owe?" So he said, 100 measures of wheat, estimated between 1,000 and 1,200 bushels. That's a lot of wheat. You know, when you talk about they planted by hand, they reaped by hand, they had to beat the, that's a lot of wheat. He said to him, "Take your bill and write 80. I don't know why he only gave him a 20% discount where he gave the other 50, but he's cutting his bill. And the idea, of course, is this goes on with all the debtors. This guy is thinking, I would be ashamed to sit out on the street holding a sign that says we'll work for food. You know that. I'm not going to be a beggar, but I'll be glad to live off the charity of my friends that I have made by cheating my master. That's an interesting character, isn't it? I will make friends of these people by really cheating my master out of what he's owed. But the surprising thing is, so the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. I made the statement recently that in parables, we think of them, sometimes we're taught, these are, true to life stories. Well, they take principles that are true, but they often in the parables, you'll see an element that's exaggerated or a twist that would be unexpected. Think about this parable. Why is the guy getting fired? Well, they were said, he's been wasting his master's goods. The guy that's getting fired for wasting the goods then turns around and goes to all the debtors and says, hey, you don't owe him as much as you originally did. The master's going to lose even more goods out of all of this. Now, what would the reality be more like? Reality be more like the owner, the master, is ready to kill him. But Jesus turns a twist and suddenly says, and the master said, wow, fella, you think well on your feet. You are shrewd here. Now, to understand this and appreciate it, got a little behind there. The way you have to understand this is by going to the end. What's the point Jesus is trying to get to? You cannot serve God and mammon. It's an interesting way to get there. But he wants us to think about our attitude toward money. And he talks about a man that was shrewd. Look at verse 8. It says, the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. Sometimes people of this world, Jesus talked about being wise as serpents. The people of this world, sometimes they seem to understand principles that we appear to be blind to. They understand the allure, the power that immodest dress can have as they use it to sell things, whether it be marketing a car, a sports magazine, whatever. And Christians will turn around and say, oh, nobody pays any attention to that. Well, then, why are all these successful businesses doing that? They understand in this world that entertainment has the power to influence. There's an ideology behind a lot of television, movies, music. But sometimes it's the sons of light just don't seem to appreciate that and get into it. But that's not his focus. I mean, there are a lot of ways, but the focus is the sons of this world, they tend to think about the future. I know not all do. But people, this man looked at his situation and said, I'm in trouble. I've got to be prepared. What do people today do? Why do people get all get so far in debt to go to college sometimes. I'm not saying, but we hear about the student loan problem. Well, because they're thinking about, I need this education in order to prepare for my future. People are, they scrimp, they save. Sometimes they cheat, like this man, because they're thinking about the future. The sons of this world are aware of the fact, one day I'll get older. One day I'll retire. I need to be saving for my future. And saving for that future is not bad. Cheating is, but we're the sons of light. In theory, we all understand we've got a far more important retirement coming. Would we take out thousands of dollars in debt in order to be prepared for that? And I mean that figuratively. But do we show the same diligence in preparing for our future? People scrimp, they save, Dave Ramsey likes to say, they'll live like no one else so they can live like no one else. They want that glorious future financially. What about spiritually? My children, my grandchildren, I've got this future coming. If somebody's just looking at me, do they see somebody that's concerned about that future? Or am I more like the sons of light, sons of this world, sons of this age? I'm preparing for that physical retirement. What are my priorities? Look at verse 9. He said, I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. That's a different way of saying it. We talk about you can't buy friends. Well, we know that. But how many times are we exhorted throughout Scripture to use money in a way to help others? And we have obligations to ourselves, to our families. But Matthew 25, and Matthew 25, 31 through 46 is not the only passage that speaks of judgment. But in that one passage, what is the one thing he says? He said, you saw my brethren out here poor and hungry and naked, and you didn't take care of them. You're going away into destruction. Or you saw my brethren in need, and you helped them. Ephesians 4:28. What does he say to the thief? Don't steal anymore, but rather labor, working with your hands, that you may provide for your family. That's not what he says there. He'll say that elsewhere. He said that you may have something to give to him who has need. That you're motivated to work in part that you might be able to help others, to make friends by means of this unrighteous mammon. I've mentioned before, my reading plan is kind of eclectic. It's all over the place. But one day last week, Luke 10 was part of my reading. Luke 10, that's the parable of the Good Samaritan. The man who stopped and he helped. He used his own supplies, his wine and his oil. He paid for the man at the inn. It included Leviticus 25, which among various regulations, some of them about the Sabbath, it said, if one among you becomes poor, it said you lend to him. And you don't charge him interest. You help him out. It included Romans 15, in which Paul discusses the collection that had been made for the saints at Jerusalem. the generosity of the Gentile saints. And the last chapter that day was Acts 20, where Paul's talking to the Ephesian elders. And do you remember, that's where he said, remember the words of the Lord Jesus. It's more blessed to give than to receive. That one day, I just kept the theme, as I, you know, and I was saying, I was working on this lesson. I had this lesson sort of, I'm trying to bring it together. It's like, wow, this is a theme of Scripture. My money is not just for me. In fact, I think when you read 10 through 12, what he's saying, it's a test. What we have right now is a test. Listen to the way he describes, and I think we have to see this as money. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. He who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? Verse 10. What we have right now is that which is least. Verse 11. What we have right now is the unrighteous mammon. Doesn't necessarily mean we got it in an unrighteous way, but it's just not the true riches. What we have right now, verse 12, is another man's. But what are we hoping for? We want much. We want true riches. We want what is our own. He said, we're being tested right now. Are we generous? Are we selfish? Sometimes what we are is we are very generous once we have met every whim and desire of our own. When we have gotten for ourselves everything that we could possibly want. You know, we've got all our toys. We got everything in line for ourselves. Those leftovers, you know, we are willing to share with anybody. I'm afraid God calls on us to do a little more than that. That have a little more priority toward helping, being generous in the work of the Lord, the needs of others. What he challenges is verse 13, is no servant can serve two masters. How many people work more than one job today? That's common in our country, isn't it? There are a lot of people who have more than one employer. We sometimes forget the difference between an employer and a master. You might be able to work a couple of jobs, but when you had a master, that man had total control of you. You can't have the two. You're going to end up hating one and loving the other, being loyal to one and despising the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. If we don't get the right attitude toward money, material things, then what we're going to find ourselves from time to time is our ethics are going to be challenged. In other words, we're going to be tempted to cheat. You know, we're going to be tempted to do something, we'll have that little wrestling match. I mean, some of the old pictures used to see the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. I'm not saying that's truly accurate, but, you know, we're going to have one of those little battles going on. If we're not truly loyal to God, sometimes God and family get shortchanged. Sometimes it's just our spiritual life in the sense of, it's not that we're cheating anybody. It's not that we're doing anybody wrong. But study and prayer, devotion to God just gets pushed to the side because we're too busy pursuing the things of this world. That's what Jesus warned about And then I want you to notice the reaction, 14 and 15. Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things, and they derided him. Literally turned up their nose at him. They sneered at him. Can you just imagine? Yeah, what's easy for an old poor homeless carpenter to talk about that? I mean, back in the ninth chapter, he said, Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Yeah, he can talk about money that way because he ain't got none. I don't know if they used bad grammar back then or not. But you know what I'm saying? People will say things like that. He said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. Let's be honest. Do you ever find yourself reading a passage in the New Testament that deals with money? Maybe the story of the rich young ruler, or 1 Timothy 6 and its exhortation to be content and warn about the love of money. And your first thought, and it may be phrased a little different, but it's some along the line of, but, and you start thinking, but there's also this passage over here. And there is, maybe, you know. That's not the full truth. But do we ever find ourselves being made a little uncomfortable? Almost seem un-American, anti-capitalist, and you know, we think. Because perhaps, just perhaps, our love of money is a little stronger than it should be. Verse 15, I want you to think about this in some ways beyond just money, but money's certainly a part of this. You are those who justify yourselves before men. Sometimes people get caught up in this rat race, as we sometimes call it. This desire to have more and more and more and more. Really not as much about their own selfish desire. Well, I got to have more. Is I worry about what others think of me. I don't want people to think I'm a failure. I want people to admire me. We get caught up in what others think in that way, versus being highly esteemed of God. What is highly esteemed among God, he said, is an abomination in the sight of God. And I see this principle applying beyond so much more beyond just money. Biblical morality is not just ignored today. It is ridiculed. The ideas of wait until marriage, the ideas of man and woman, versus man and man and woman and you know, who knows what we are anymore. Those kind of things are ridiculed. The idea of even just that it matters even how we worship and serve God. People ridicule that. If we're not really careful, that can get to us. Nobody likes that. Nobody wants to be that person that others are laughing at, making fun of. We need to be careful here. I also want you to take note, verse 15. God knows your heart. The Pharisees, think about this context. Oh, that everybody looked up to them. Remember, he would say in Matthew 23, they had those fancy robes and their phylacteries. That is, those were things in which God had told them to bind the law on their head and on their forehead and on their hands. And I mean, they made boxes and they made them big where everybody could see them. And they walked through the marketplace. People said, oh, Rabbi, they thought highly of them. He said, God knows exactly what you are. God knows what I am. You know, I want to be a light to this world. That's what every one of you wants to be. It matters what kind of image we portray in this world, because we're supposed to be an influence for good. But sometimes what we want to call light in the world is really just nothing but a show. We need to be careful of that. Don't let that happen to us. I'm going to jump down to verse 19. There are some things that are said in 16 and 8 through 18 that we want to come back to later. But I want us to read the story of the rich man and Lazarus. And I want us to see it the way I think it was intended originally to be seen. He's continuing with the God and Mammon. He's continuing with what is highly esteemed among men as an abomination in the sight of God. Do you notice verse 19, there was a certain rich man? How did the first story start off? There was a certain rich man who had a steward. Jesus uses the exact same words twice. That ought to grab our attention. That's a way of signaling. I've not left this subject yet. There was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, I beg you, therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to them, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead. I've already said, there are a lot of things we can take from this story. And I intend to explore some of those next week, Lord willing, things about the afterlife. But I want you to just think about the picture that's painted. Jesus has said, what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. You can't serve God and mammon. And what he does then, he paints a picture of two men who could not be in any more different circumstances. The one man has it all going for him. And we can just imagine what folks said about this rich man and his fine table and how folks would have just loved to have been there. And then you've got this man named Lazarus who's a beggar. And do you notice it says laid at Lazarus' gate? It would seem to imply that he didn't even of his own power have the ability to walk there. He's covered in sores. He just wishes that somehow the crumbs that would fall from the table. You remember Jesus with that woman, that Syrophoenician woman in Matthew 15? And the woman said, the dogs, little dogs get the crumbs that fall. Lazarus said, if I could just get the spillover that falls off the table. Instead, he's got dogs licking his sores. That's how it looked in this world. But like all people, they came to the end and they died. And then we found out God saw things a lot differently. This man that was a pillar of the community ended up in torments. Not because he was wealthy, but because obviously he had loved mammon and not God. He had clearly not made friends by means of the mammon of unrighteousness. He let a beggar lay at his gate, covered in sores, without any help to him. Lazarus, can you imagine how despised this man was? And this man was accepted. He was saved of God. It is a probing question. Do I worry more about what other people think? Or am I really focused on what's going to happen when I die? Am I really focused on that desire that the angels carry me to Abraham's bosom? Or do I sometimes worry a little too much about what others think? Something else that's interesting in this is how he views Lazarus. You know, he says, Father Abraham, I'm miserable. Take Lazarus from your bosom. And the idea of the being in his bosom is probably, as we would see later in John 13, as they reclined at the table and the apostle John leaned on the bosom of Jesus, the picture is probably intended to be that of there's a great banquet. This poor beggar who didn't even get crumbs off the table, he's right there at the place of honor with Abraham at the table. And whatever the picture, he's in comfort. The rich man says, get Lazarus up from there and send him over here with some water for me. When he says no to that, then it's, well, send Lazarus back to my father's house. You know, here is this one who never had anything but suffering, miserable. This rich man doesn't care about his comfort. He still sees him as a servant. Sometimes we think more about having others do our bidding than being a servant. It was a common problem of the disciples. The disciples, how many times did they argue about greatness? And Jesus would say, be a servant. This rich man, even in torments, still looks at old Lazarus and says, that man ought to be able to do something for me. Our job is not to have people do things for us. It's to do things for others. Let's bring this to a conclusion. We've got a future to plan for. I'm not telling anybody to quit saving for their retirement. You know, not fund their IRA or their 401k. But let me tell you, that's not your real retirement. That's not your real future. Your priority better be on the real future. We need to be honest with ourselves. And this is one of the most difficult things to do. What is my real attitude toward money? What are my thoughts about this world? Do I care more about my standing in this world than my standing before God? And just like you had those two people who couldn't have been any more different, and yet the same thing happened to them. They both died. That's going to come to us all. What happens then? Some will be in comfort, some will be in torments. We want the comfort, don't we? Let's listen to Jesus. Let's do what he tells us. Let's diligently prepare for our future. The song that's been selected is one of the great songs ever written. As it takes us on the journey from being self-centered to being Christ-centered. And that's the journey we all need to take. This morning, if you're not right with God, why don't you begin that? Why don't you come to Him? Allow yourself to be baptized into Christ, being finished with sin, ready to repent of it, confess Christ. Maybe a child of God, you need to come back. If we can help you, come as we stand and sing together.